Hi, Stephanie and Jeremy. My name is Eileen, and I am a single mom of two kids aged 20 and 12. And I started camping when I was younger with the Scouts, and then as a young adult, I tent camped and found that I love the outdoors. As kids, we took road trips every summer, although we did them in a station wagon, stopping at Holiday Inns or Howard Johnson's along the way. That really shows my age there. But we thought we were living large. When I had my own kids, I really wanted them to see the United States like I did from road adventures. So we started off in our minivan, traveling from hotel to hotel, all the time seeing all the RVs on the road, thinking, how cool would it be to travel like that? So I started renting RVs every summer, and we took our road trips and loved it. I decided that after renting an RV for 3 years in a row that we should get one of our own. So we started out with a Class A, then we went to a trailer, and then now we're back, we're in a Class C, a small one. When we're camping as a family, we feel free and relaxed. We have so many laughs, and it gives us a chance to really get to know each other on another level. When I camp alone, it's my time to recharge and relax. Sometimes I just go an hour to 3 hours away to a Jellystone or a KOA and enjoy the peace. This makes me a better mom. Living the camping and RV life is what makes us closer as a family and provides us with adventures we couldn't experience any other way. If it wasn't for finding RVSTA and the Girl Camper podcast, I might not have had made it this far. I am grateful every day that I found all of you and hope to see you at the campground someday soon.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
And we write about RV and family travel with our three boys, Theo, Max, and Wes, and also Sweet Maggie the camping dog.
You can read about our adventures at RVFTA.com, and you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram.
On this week's episode of RV Family Travel Atlas, we are taking you to one of our very favorite RV destinations ever, Charleston, South Carolina.
Charleston has something for every single traveler out there. History, shopping, beaches, nature preserves, and of course, ridiculously delicious food.
You might think every RV adventure has to include a brand new destination, but we know Charleston is worth visiting again and again. You are listening to episode number 225, 23 Things to Do in Charleston, South Carolina.
Before we head into this week's feature topic, 23 things to do in Charleston, South Carolina, it is time for a big thank you to our sponsors, to Jayco, to Thetford, to Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts, and to our friends at Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's, and to our friends that bring us the endless hot water, our friends at Truma.
Our very, very bestie friends. Truma has been the leading European supplier for RV accessories for over 70 years, and they pioneered caravan heating in Europe in 1961. And then they came over to America in 2015 with the absolutely fantastic, the AquaGo, okay?
What's weird is I just love it more and more.
Yeah, every single trip we take, we're like, this is amazing. It offers truly instant, constant, and endless hot water. The AquaGo can replace any existing 6 to 16-gallon RV water heater. And they have a special rebate available right now for folks that have another brand of tankless water heater. They want to give them
like one of those brands that don't work very
well.
Yeah,
well, that's the problem, is that tankless hot water heaters got a little bit of a bad rap at first because some of the ones that started to come out in RVs were difficult. They didn't work well. And Truma's like, no, we're different. And they really are. You know why? Because they work perfectly. The AquaGo's work perfectly.
The thing just fired itself right up after when I deWinterized. Snap of the fingers.
We were like crossing our fingers.
Like,
we were like,
the AquaGo was like, I'm here.
I'm ready. I'm ready to go. So before we went down to Charleston, it was so funny because Max actually said to me, and I know this sounds like something like somebody's going to hashtag like things kids don't say, but Max actually said to me, Mom, am I going to be able to take endless hot showers? And what he meant by that, of course, was are we going to have hookups in Charleston? Because we do camping sometimes where we don't have sewer hookups. And in those cases, we're like, you can't take endless hot showers.
It's not that the hot water is going to run out. It's that we're going to fill up our tanks too quickly.
Right. So he wanted to know if we were going to be on full hookups so that he could truly enjoy the Aqua Go to its fullest extent.
We've discovered that the real magic lately is that we can give all of our kids showers and then we still have hot water for our showers, because which was just not the case in the past.
Parents matter. Right?
We do. That's been a whole theme this season.
We want people to believe. We think maybe if we say it enough, it will be true. All right? Parents matter, and you deserve a hot shower. All right. So go to Truma.com. You can learn more about the AquaGo, learn more about the spring rebate that they have right now, and learn more about getting your unlimited, endless, constant hot water.
Now, there are endless, constant things to do in Charleston. I mean, this could be 100 things to do in Charleston, but these are all things we have actually done. 23 awesome things that we've done. Now, we're going to dive right into this content, but we want to tell you now, we have a huge RVFTA announcement at the end of the show. It's about the future of this podcast and the future of the Campground of the Week podcast. It's all good news, and you're not going to want to miss it. So make sure you listen to that last segment at the end.
Yeah, don't just turn off and be like, okay, I know everything I need to know about Charleston.
I got my 23 things.
I have my 23
for
things
Charleston.
Down. I'm ready to go. All right. So now, note that the reason why there's so many things to do in this episode is what we decided to do was combine the things that we really enjoyed from our last trip with the things that we really enjoyed from this trip and sort of make the absolute seminal RVFTA Charleston podcast.
You couldn't do all this stuff in 1 week.
Right.
I wouldn't recommend
this is great
it.
Because you can pick and choose depending on what's good for you and the people that you're traveling with. So in this first segment, what we're going to focus on is sort of the history and the city scene. Now, we really dove into this headfirst on our first visit, and I think that that's definitely the right way to go. If you're visiting Charleston for the first time, you want to soak up the history. This is one of the most relevant historical cities in America. In fact, during our first visit, we kind of felt like it was Boston of the South.
I keep coming back to that comparison. I mean, Boston's probably a bigger city at the end of the day, but in terms of just the amazing amount of American history, Charleston and Boston constantly come to mind together.
Right, because we're talking about colonial history. We're talking about revolutionary history. We're talking about Civil War history. So it just goes through, and it was this important city during all of those major time periods in America. So we were blown away on our first trip by the historical knowledge. Now, it was great because this time we went back and we didn't do as much of the history because we kind of had the scene set for us and we could dive into some other things. So, and I'm glad that we did it that way. I think it's a great way to do it. But so number one is a carriage tour. And that's not the first thing we did in Charleston, but I think it's something that you can't miss. Charleston has a history of really taking its tour guides and its tours very seriously. You can take a number of amazing tours in Charleston. So this is just one of the options, but it's a really popular one.
I think it is actually a really good starting point to begin to understand the city. So we recommend the Palmetto Carriage Works. And this is really the only thing that we did twice. We did it during our first trip and we loved it so much. We kind of wanted to do it again. And plus, you randomly get assigned one of four tour zones. Mm-hmm. So when you buy your tour tickets, you don't know which one of the four tours you're going to get. You get on the carriage, the horse pulls up to a checkpoint, and then they basically randomly
tell you. It's a lottery. It's actually these walls that pop up.
Based on where all the horses are. Oh, you're going to number one. Yeah. You're going to number two. So we were really lucky that we got a different tour this time. And our tour guide even said, oh, are you guys getting a different one? Because he that's a thing. Like, you want to get a different one. And we did.
You know what, though? The tour guides are so rooted in Charleston and the history that I really feel like even if you went on the same tour with a different tour guide, I feel like you'd get a completely different story. Now, I just want to say one thing. The reason why we chose the Palmetto Carriage Works is because they have a reputation for being incredibly animal friendly. And some people are concerned with that with carriage tours. And this one, they have so so much literature about the way that their horses are treated and their farm time and all of that stuff.
Well, Max actually voiced concern.
Yes,
like, are the horses being well treated? And so we did read up on it and explain it to him.
And this company takes that very seriously. So I like that.
Now, the second thing we're going to recommend is the pirate tour. And we can't guarantee that the pirates are treated well on the pirate tour.
They are. It's a couple that run the pirate tours and they have their parrots and they are hysterical.
This is a 2-hour walking tour that brings the history of piracy in Charleston alive. So you're going to get stories about Blackbeard. You're going to get stories about Calico Jack.
Who they say that Jack Sparrow might be based on, loosely based on.
They're taking
historically.
Credit for that.
Yeah.
And you start at the really cool Powder Magazine Museum, which is a National Historic Site. So the kids loved this last time. It was maybe a little long for Wesley last year.
Yeah.
I think it would have been even better this year, but it wasn't something we went back to.
Yeah, because it is a long tour, but honestly, kids are engaged in this. Look, there's a parrot. They tell really sort of funny, spicy, saucy jokes the whole time, right? It's very interactive.
Like Pirate PG.
It is, and it's right. It's not inappropriate.
It's like Pirates of the Caribbean appropriate.
It's just stepping up to the line, you know? And because it's a walking tour, yes, it's a little more strenuous for the kids, but it just really lays out the city for you. And it takes you to all of the big places in that historic district, which is a great thing.
Yeah. And also our third recommendation in that historic district is the Old Exchange Building and Provost Dungeon. And if you have boys like we do, they're going to love visiting a dungeon.
Yeah, this was really memorable for our boys. So the Old Exchange Building and Provost Dungeon was built in 1771, and it's the site of some of the most important historical moments in Charleston history. So you want to put this on your list. Now, you'll visit this site on the pirate tour. Okay, if you take the pirate tour. But even if you decide not to do the pirate tour, you still should visit, all right? There's a self-guided area of the museum that's just like 2 floors of
exhibits. It's like a 25-minute self-guided tour.
No, the 25 minutes is the tour that you go down into
that's
the
right.
Dungeon. Yeah, you can take any time you want on your self-guided tour up top. But the when they took us down to the dungeon, it was like 25 minutes, and you can only go down there on the guided
tour.
And
it's cool because you'll see the only standing portion of the original city wall.
Yeah.
And so the dungeon was really memorable to me from last year.
It's kind of breathtaking to go down there. You feel like, I mean, they tell you the
stories.
You feel
like you're in the past. I mean, it really does transport you into the history of the city.
And it was used as a military prison during the British occupation, during the Revolutionary War. And they just kind of tell you about all those things. Obviously, the exchange, a lot of the commerce happened there prior to that. They really rope you in and give you the scene.
Number 4, shopping at the Old City Market, that really ropes you in. When I asked Max and Theo and Wes at the end of this, our second trip to Charleston, what their single favorite thing was, I think 2 of the 3 of them said shopping at the City Market. They loved
it. They loved it.
They loved that street vendor
experience. They said, it was so funny, they said, we didn't remember that it was this great last time. And I said to them, guys, you just weren't old enough to really appreciate it and to take in all the stuff that was here. This time they were old enough to be looking at all the
vendors. And they
had
more of a budget. You know, like we had given them each $20.
Well, they understand, you know, they could get a souvenir last time, but this time they understand the idea of commerce, right?
Well, and we all got something we were excited about.
Yeah.
So for the first time, you bought a really pretty sweet grass basket, which you see them on display and they're so lovely. You got a really cool one.
Yeah. And I actually went through all the vendors and went back to one that I feel was really unique in the way that they did these wall hanging ones that I like. It's very similar
smaller,
to my style.
Only about $65. So you can get one that's reasonably priced.
Yeah, and it was decorative, so I felt like I could hang it somewhere at home and really kind of enjoy it all the time and put something in it. So I'm excited about it.
I got 2 bags of locally roasted coffee. I think it was called like the High Kick Coffee Roaster.
She was great.
They're there regularly, so if you walk through, that's the only vendor selling locally roasted coffee beans.
She wanted us to smell every kind. She wanted to tell us about it. She was great.
Some stories about the origins of the coffee and how it's roasted. And I bought 2 bags. I bought the Holy City blend, which was a mix of a dark and light roast, and I bought a Honduras black roast, and they were both really awesome. And like, it's rare that both of us love a coffee, but we both loved the Holy City blend.
Yeah, that was my favorite that you made while we were there from local coffee.
And then we got this really cool wood relief map of Charleston mm-hmm. that you already put up in our sitting room upstairs, or sort of living room / sitting room. And it looks great up there. We both loved that. So just like locally handcrafted paintings and things like that. And the boys all wanted necklaces
because for some reason,
necklaces are cool, like on our block right now.
Yeah, they're in a necklace phase and it was fun. Because they could find some fun affordable necklaces.
They got one for $5.
And then one for $12.
One for $12 that broke.
Yeah, the 12, well, not the O's, but one of the 12s broke. And, but yeah, anyway.
Our boys are rough too, though. So the necklace was probably fine. It was probably
that. You know what? They bounce back. And that's important for kids to understand. Like, you buy something cheap, maybe it's not going to last that long.
Okay, now for numbers 5 and 6, we're going to recommend two of the heavy hitters. We did both of these on the first trip. We took our time. We did them thoroughly. We did not feel the need to go back, though they were both amazing. If it's your first trip to Charleston, you definitely want to do Fort Moultrie and Fort Sumter. And we actually recommended 2 or 3 years ago that you do Fort Moultrie first. That's near Sullivan's Island. It's on the mainland. And you can see Fort Sumter. Then I think it would be interesting on the next day or that afternoon to head out to Fort Sumter, which is where the first shots of the Civil War were fired. These are both incredibly historic locations, both National Park Service sites in Charleston. Really wonderful, really amazing.
Yeah, but you have to take a ferry out to Fort Sumter. And on that ferry, you get a historical lesson. And you also, if you take the first ferry of the day out, you get to participate in the raising of the flag, which I think is a really fun experience. So I would highly recommend doing that first ferry ride out to Fort Sumter.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I got great pictures of that. That was really fun.
Yeah, so I do recommend going to Fort Moultrie first, but I do think that then you should explore more of Sullivan's Island area that day and then go to Fort Sumter maybe the next day.
And Moultrie's history, if I'm understanding correctly, actually predates Fort Sumter. So Fort Moultrie goes back to the 1776, American Revolution.
It was built before that. And then it was really pivotal in the American Revolution. So they fended off a British attack, but then it fell under British control for a majority in like 1780 when the British did take control of Charleston. So if you do that, you sort of get a feeling for more of the other history, where a lot of what you see in Charleston is they're telling stories about when they were occupied, right? Charleston is this city that's been constantly back and forth between different occupying forces. And that's a really big part of their history. And Fort Moultrie was a big part of that history.
Yeah, now this year, for the first time, this is the 7th thing we're recommending. We did the USS Yorktown. This is major. And I enjoyed it every bit as much as I enjoyed Sumter and Moultrie. I mean, to be able to go and walk on the deck of this carrier was really awe-inspiring. And it's filled with all of the World War II planes as well.
Yeah, so this is actually at a place called Patriots Point Naval and Maritime Museum. It's right across the bridge in Mount Pleasant. So you can see the Charleston skyline. You can see Fort Sumter from the top of the naval carrier. And it is the 10th U.S. Naval aircraft carrier that America ever had. And it served in World War II all the way through Vietnam, and it was decommissioned in 1970. So it really has a long and storied history attached to it, including like picking up crew members from the Apollo 8, you know, out of the ocean and onto the deck. So it was really interesting to go. But I have to say, even though it had so much history attached to it, the shining star of this visit was really how it brought life on the ship aboard. I've been through so many submarines and, you know, ships that are out there that are decommissioned and open in as museums. This one really spent time, I felt like, helping you imagine what daily life on the ship was.
When you were, the flight deck was amazing. It was awe-inspiring. But then when you go below, you're in the living quarters.
Mm-hmm.
You're walking through what would have been the kitchens. You're walking through the dentist chairs,
the doctors, the emergency medical rooms, and laundry room.
You really do feel like for a brief window of time, you're living on the ship with the crew. And I was beyond impressed.
It was cool. I don't feel like I've ever seen that much of
no way.
A U.S.
It feels
ship.
Like you see
yeah.
everything.
Yeah.
And the self-guided tours were excellent. So
you follow the path. Yeah.
And the paths, yeah, they're very well laid out. It was recommended to us that we do tours 1 and 3. So 3 takes you up to the flight deck, and that's what we did first. And then you go up a few floors into the control rooms and the rooms where the officers had their quarters. And then 1 takes you down into the living quarters mm-hmm. of the ship. So
the boys
and
love
there,
that.
There's a whole second tour too, but it's just like 1
there's
and 3
tons to do
took
there.
Up enough of our time.
And those were again, just like we always recommend at state parks and national parks and everything like that. The first thing that we did was we went to the counter with the volunteer there, and we said, "What do you recommend?" We showed them our kids. We're always like, "We have kids this age," and he gave us great recommendations.
He's like 1 and 3 are going to be mm-hmm. enough. You don't need to do 1, 2, and 3. And we felt totally satisfied after doing 1 and 3, and we really took our time up on the deck as well.
I want to say one more thing. There are audio sets there for an additional fee. Now, the audio sets were enough of an additional fee that it kind of like threw me off for getting them for our whole family. We've used audio sets in the past, and they've been really effective. Like, they suck our boys in when they can push that number and listen to somebody or something talk about a topic. But these were like $6 a piece. And so I thought an additional $30 for all of us to have an audio set. I forewent them, and I did not get the audio sets. We had a great visit anyway. At the same time, I might say, if you want to splurge, they're
if
usually worth it.
If your kids were older than ours, I think it would be worth the splurge. I think for our boys, or twin boys that are 9 going on 10, and Wesley that just turned 6, there was enough to read about each of the rooms that I felt like we were very educated about life on the ship. I didn't feel the need for the audio tour personally.
Yeah. So number 8, there are countless plantation tours available in Charleston, and you're probably going to have to pick and choose which one works best for you. It might be about your location. For example, this time we were staying at the Mount Pleasant Charleston KOA. Boone Plantation was right there near there.
And the Mount Pleasant Charleston KOA, which we're reviewing this week on Campground of the Week, that's actually on a plantation.
Yeah, Oakland
property.
Plantation. But we went to the Magnolia Plantation and Garden, which is the most visited plantation in the Charleston area. And it's that way for a reason. It kind of encapsulates a lot of the things that you see on multiple plantations and other places, and it kind of brings them all together. For instance, there is the trolley tour that's available that is
worth
every
doing.
Penny, because it really takes you on, and it covers so much, you know, land that you wouldn't be able to really walk on foot.
And you're talking about a plantation, it's not, the history's not just about the house. It's
yeah.
about the people that were enslaved
right.
working on the plantation.
So they brought that to life a little bit on the trolley. Also, the gardens are legendary. They're award-winning, you know, I mean.
We saw alligators all over the
if
place.
If you want photo ops, like if you want classic Southern photo ops, this is the place to go. Now, I do want to say that, you know, the stain on history of slavery can easily be overlooked when you're visiting these plantations as just part of that. Oh, look at the pretty trees. Look at the house. Look at, you know, it's a little bit tough to balance sort of that really difficult piece of history with also the beauty and the grandeur of these old estates. So at the Magnolia Plantation and Gardens, they do have the Slavery to Freedom Tour, and that focuses, they've refurbished this whole group of the slave dwellings, and they really take you through all of them and focus on the history of the Gullah, which are the people that were that are the descendants of the original slaves in Charleston that worked these plantations, and their contributions to Low Country culture,
which are massive and
right.
still felt and still alive.
Yeah,
the descendants still live all around Charleston.
It will, and the Gullah. When we were taking the carriage tour, we went through a part of the historical district where the tour guide was showing us how the houses of the Gullah are still painted that traditional, it's like a robin's egg blue. And I didn't know that. And that marks the doors of current day Gullah that are living in the city.
And
so,
I think the idea is that it keeps evil spirits.
Right.
Alive.
So obviously, yeah. So it's not just so that we see.
But
that
I'm glad
there.
You pointed out that Magnolia Plantation, you do get a well-rounded picture.
You can, if you go if you into can. Those tours, and if that's something that's important to you, I highly recommend that. Definitely.
All right. number nine, and we didn't do this on our first trip. I'm so glad we did it on this trip. We went and saw a Charleston River Dogs minor league game. It's a beautiful park. It's right up against some gorgeous marshes. It's very small.
The
sunset was phenomenal. It's a very small, old school, kind of retro feeling park. We had third row seats behind first base. We had awesome seats. A close game. The boys loved every second of it. And the food was really good. You could get things like chicken and waffles there. You could get
in
some low country. You could, in a dog bowl.
The boys love that. They
you
sell
get low
that
country
in a
food
dog
there.
Bowl.
I don't know if I'm going to call it low country cuisine because it is ballpark versions
no,
of the food.
The bowl that I got was macaroni and cheese, pulled pork, and okra all together.
Well, you picked the best thing
and
in the whole state.
That was simply delicious. Like, I wanted to go back and buy another one.
Well,
when
I got
was
the
done.
Chicken and
so
waffles.
Good.
Of course I did. Which was solid for ballpark food, but nothing like real chicken and waffles, like we'll talk about in a little
and
bit.
And I also enjoyed a belly itcher ale, which is from the local brewing company.
Just for the ballpark.
Called Rusty Bowl Brewing. And they made that just for the ballpark. And it was definitely good. It was like a blonde ale. It was great.
What a great name. Belly itcher ale. Unfortunately,
fun.
The River Dogs lost 2-1.
I know.
But it was a lovely
night. But it was
night.
A hard game, a hard fought game.
It was a real. It was good baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, the boys and I really enjoyed the
you
game.
Weren't
so
bored,
did you.
That's for sure. All right, so we've got 9 down. We got 23 recommendations for you in this podcast. 9 down. We can do the math on that, Jar. 14 left to go.
I'm an English teacher. I'm not even going to try to do that math. But what I do know is that our next segment's going to all be about getting outside. There's so much to do in the great outdoors in Charleston, and we're going to give you the best tips. So stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. You are listening to our big episode on Charleston, South Carolina. This is 23 things to do while you're in Charleston, and I hope you're ready for the next 6 things that we're going to recommend, and they all have to do with getting outside. But before we dive into more great Charleston tips, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts.
If you want to check out character visits and all-day family fun at an affordable price, then you need to visit Jellystone Park Camp Resorts. So Jellystone Campgrounds are truly designed to let your family check out of that everyday busyness, you know, craziness that we get into and kick back and remember what it's like to just have fun together as a family.
Memorial Day weekend, we're camping with Yogi Bear at a Jellystone Park. I'm so excited.
We are. We're visiting one that we've been excited to visit for a long time because it's really Jellystone, in a lot of these Jellystone campgrounds, they've been in families for, you know, decades. And these families have just continually, you know, improved these Jellystones and they have it so dialed in with that activity experience. And the campground that we're visiting in Memorial Day weekend is famous for having just a fantastic Jellystone roster of activities. And so we're excited to check that out and definitely, of course, report back to you. And then we're also going to be going back to an old favorite this year as well. So we like to find new Jellystones to have fun at and also revisit the ones that we've been to in the past.
And now's the time to book for like the fall.
Yeah.
I mean, you could still squeeze in a summer trip. Don't get me wrong. Give it a shot. But you want to be booking your fall weekends now. And you're going to want to visit jellystonepark.com to see a Jellystone Park near you.
Yeah. So let's dive into the outdoor experiences that we have had at Charleston that we've absolutely loved. And this is important because part of the magic of this city is that it's also truly connected to the great outdoors right around it, right? So it's a coastal city. So you have the city and the downtown, and then you have the beaches and the marshlands.
And the beaches are really just gorgeous South Carolina beaches. Like, they're not urban, right? I mean, they're just gorgeous wild beaches. So it combines the two elements of city and beach in a way that like nowhere else does on
yeah.
the East Coast, if you ask
well,
me.
Well, and let's also say that the Charleston state parks and county parks are just world class. So they've taken also a lot of these pockets of nature around the city, and they just absolutely maximize the enjoyment of those areas with bike trails and all that kind of stuff that you can do, and hiking and everything.
What a great place to live.
Yeah, they really do it right down there. All right. So
what it was also world class was the trip out to Bull's Island with Coastal Expeditions, and that's our 10th recommendation. We did that for the first time on this trip.
It's been on my list,
and it was
for
my
years.
Absolute favorite thing that we did on this trip. It was so yes. much fun. Bull's Island was gorgeous and beautiful. The boat ride out there was nice. We had the beach just to ourselves with the other people on the boat. We swam, we walked, we collected seashells, loved every second of it.
All right, so Bull's Island is part of the Cape Romaine National Wildlife Refuge. So it's an uninhabited island, and you have to get there by boat, and private boats can go there and dock up for the day. Nobody can ever stay overnight. But the only way to get there on somebody else's boat, right, is by this Coastal Expeditions ferry that goes out twice a day. You can go out either for a half day or a full day. So the half day is going to be 4 hours, and the full day is going to be 8.
And that was tricky for us because we felt yes. like the 4 hours wasn't enough, but we felt like 8 was too long with our
but
kids.
But next time we will go for the
we
full
would do
day.
A full day, and bring more food, bring more water.
Yeah, and we know now, like, we would have it dialed in as to how to do it. I was nervous about spending the whole day in a place where you're, like, stuck. But I feel like now that we've been there, I'd be confident. And this is the kind of place where I can't imagine going back to Charleston and not going here. It was that amazing. And our boys had a phenomenal time. We shelled. You get off the ferry and you have to walk a mile and a half to get to the beach.
It's a pretty walk.
It's gorgeous. It's a hike, really. You're hiking to the beach and then you get to the
and
beach.
And you're rushing because you want to get to the beach.
Right,
and you're
want getting, as much time.
And you're getting hot. You're getting a little bit sweaty and you're getting warm. And then when you get to the beach, you're just dying to dive in the water, and the ocean was beautiful.
So I would highly recommend that if you feel like you can do the full day out there, take the morning ferry that's at 9 o'clock, go out. Everybody has a backpack with a full water bottle, lunch, and a beach towel. And everybody carries their own thing, right? Because you want a backpack for the mile and a half hike, comfortable hiking shoes. You go, you take your time walking, you enjoy a hike, you get to the beach, you shell, you go to Boneyard Beach, which was phenomenal with all the driftwood and everything. And then you swim, you relax and enjoy the day, and then you go back on the afternoon ferry.
Now, while you're there, you're actually close to the Center for Birds of Prey, which you pass on the way home.
Right
so
up the road.
So if you did the half day, you could combo it with the Center for Birds of Prey, though they are worthy of their own day, basically. So the Center for Birds of Prey we did on the last trip, and that was a magnificent, magnificent experience. The boys really loved it.
We actually went to the Center for Birds of Prey when we were in Myrtle Beach.
Oh, that's
one
right.
time.
It wasn't
because
even our Charleston
trip. South.
Trip.
Yeah, we actually drove south about an hour to go to this. This is another trip, but it's right there and really close to Mount Pleasant. So this one, you take a guided tour at the center of all the raptors that they have, the owls. I mean, it's just amazing. The guided tour, I learned so much about
the hawk
vultures.
Demonstrations.
And then you actually get a flight demonstration where they're flying the raptors and they're feeding them and everything. It is unbelievable.
And you might get attacked by fire ants while
and the
you're
boys
there.
Still remember our visit because they got fire ants.
Like really bad.
In the parking lot, not like during
now,
the
we'll
tour.
Talk about the Siwi restaurant later, but I just want to make sure I drop in. The legendary Siwi restaurant, which is a famous road food joint, is right next door.
All right, let's talk beaches. So this time we were really happy to discover for number 12, the Isle de Palms County Park. So we were definitely planning on going to the beach in the Isle de Palms area because we were right near there because we were staying in Mount Pleasant this time. And last time we had stayed in James Island. And so we were going to the beach there and we find the county park.
Well, when you come over the bridge, we were just looking for parking
we
for
like,
the
we'll
beach. And Stephanie
beach.
Was like, oh, the county park's right there. It's only 10 bucks to park for the whole day.
For the whole day.
And there was a huge parking
huge
lot.
Huge parking lot. The amenities were great. It had bathrooms, showers, changing rooms, food,
volleyball,
like the little vendors. Yeah.
And then also less than a block away, there's pizza, there's a Ben and Jerry's ice cream, there's some little beach shops. it's basically a perfect place to spend the day at the beach.
Totally.
Now, it was crowded.
Yeah.
And we were the convenience of it. We weren't looking for some lonely, windswept beach.
Well, we had just been on an uninhabited island the day before.
If you want to be alone on some gorgeous beach,
go to Bull's Island.
Yeah, go to Bull's Island, or even Sullivan's Island is much less crowded. But we didn't care about the crowds at all. We had a great time. We swam all day, and then we went and got Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Yeah,
Cherry Garcia.
As you just mentioned, number 13 is Sullivan's Island. So just a little bit up the road is the beach area that's down by Fort Moultrie. So you compare, like we did, Fort Moultrie and Sullivan's Island for a beach day.
That's a great day. Fort Moultrie in the morning, and then just have your beach chairs and your towels and go to the beach and go for a swim after. That works really, really well.
Now, Sullivan's Island Beach feels a little more urban-y because you see the skyline from the beach and you see the fort, you know, from the beach and everything. So it feels like you have, it's like a little different. It's a different kind of experience.
Yeah, but then the beaches are still kind of lonely and quiet, and you have to walk up through
some dune grass
and everything. And then there's gorgeous homes all around. It's a beautiful neighborhood there.
Yes, very she, right? Okay, so then another area that we discovered based on a local's recommendation this year was number 14, Shem's Creek. So this is right near Sullivan's Island. So I wanted to include it as part of some, like, kind of a grouping, right? If you went to Fort Moultrie and Sullivan's Island.
And then dinner at a restaurant at Shem's Creek.
Right. So Shem's Creek is this, like, beautiful boardwalk area, right? Like, there's lots of the shrimp working boats that are right there as they come in and everything. So it's kind of this marina that's very, like, still a working marina.
The boardwalk's really lovely. It takes you far out in the water. Mm-hmm. There were obviously some kayak tours going out past us when we were walking on the boardwalk. And then there are several really good restaurants.
They're
right,
like
there.
bar and grill kind of restaurants.
Everybody said that they were all good. Everyone was just like, take your pick. They're all good.
Yeah, I have to say that we ate at one of them, and I would recommend Paige's over eating right there. So if you want just the view, then Vickery's was great. But if you want the best food, I would recommend, this is what my day would be, Moultrie's, Fort Moultrie, Sullivan's Island for the beach, go walk on the boardwalk, and then eat at Paige's.
Yeah, that's a great point. Except then it's like two things, the eating dinner and the boardwalk.
Or eat dinner and then go for a boardwalk, walk
at
sunset.
But you'd have to get in the car and go to the other
place. Yeah, but it's like, yeah. I mean, we're talking about it's a couple close. Minutes. It's right there.
But call that a perfect day in Charleston.
Yeah. No,
comboing
it is.
Those
like,
things.
That's
and I love
all...
how you called Fort Moultrie. Moultrie is like an Irish pub.
Well, because I was
meanwhile, it's like a fort from the Revolutionary
I was like
War. Stephanie wanted a cold beer at Moultrie's.
Moultrie's, I know. I caught myself on that, but it was a little ridiculous. And then the last beach that we want to recommend is Folly Beach, because, of course, you might be down at James Island, right? So even though Charleston is not this huge city, because there's all these waterways and everything, there you can, you know, depending on where you stay, will depend on how long it is to drive to these different places. So if you're in Mount Pleasant, then the Isle de Palms or Sullivan's Island are great options. If you're in James Island, then you'll want to look at Folly's Beach, which is great.
It's right there.
And
if you're at the Mount Pleasant Charleston KOA, you're going to look at Isle de Palms. You're going to look at Sullivan's Island. So no matter where you're camping, you've got cool beach options right there.
So and Folly's Island is what Folly's Beach is on. You definitely want to go to the County Park Beach again. So there's lots of beaches along the stretch that are just like those houses, and you can fight for parking. Or you can just go down to the end where there's a county beach and you can pay and get on, and they have restrooms and guarded beaches. And it's just a little more of a user-friendly experience.
And I don't know if I have the perfect read on this, but I grew up surfing around the Jersey Shore. I think that Folly Beach is a little rougher and a bit more waves. And I think Sullivan's Beach is a bit more low tide sandbar, as is Isle de Palms. Now, I'm not positive I'm right about that in a consistent way, but I think I am.
All right. So those are all of our outside options, right? Right? And all these places, they can all be a day. So Folly's Beach, Sullivan's
Island.
They
do in Charleston.
They have shopping and restaurants at all those places.
But don't cram too much in. I know we're giving 23 things, but this is like two or three trips worth. I think that you want to slow down in Charleston, you know? So we're going to come back.
You want to slow down because you've got to eat a lot while you're there.
If you don't bring a healthy appetite to Charleston, then you're not really in Charleston.
I got to detox now that we're home.
Oh my God. So do I. We are going to recommend our favorite eats in and around Charleston, places that we've loved over our last two trips there. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the show, everybody. You are listening to episode 225, 23 Things to Do in Charleston, South Carolina. It's time to talk about all of the good eats. And we've got like 8 or 9 awesome restaurants to recommend. But before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Jayco.
Life is good in Jayco's 2019 Precept Prestige Class A motorhome, featuring an outdoor entertainment center, a kitchen fit for a chef, and a large expanding sofa. The Precept Prestige is your home on wheels. Visit your local Jayco dealer or Jayco.com for more information. Jayco, generations of family fun.
Now, your Precept is going to have a really nice kitchen in it, but if you take your Jayco Precept to Charleston,
don't
plan on using it. Stephanie made it clear on this trip, I'm not doing a lot of grocery shopping. I'm not doing a lot of cooking at the campground. We are going to eat great food
in Charleston. Don't look at me and say, what's for dinner? Like, go out. I mean, like, look, I don't get here all the time.
You nailed it. Stephanie nails it time after time on
the boys are like, Mom, you're really doing it.
Our like 6-year-old and 9-year-old boys are like, Mom, like, nailed it. So the first place we went to on this trip, I think it was our first night in Charleston, was Swig and Swine. It's right by the City Market. They have a few locations outside of the city, but the original is right by City Market. We had an incredible meal there. It was empty. There was no wait. And they were the best burnt ends.
It was Easter, Jer.
Everyone in Charleston was at church.
But we were there.
I had the best burnt ends.
Yes.
And we had the best fried pickles
Those
we've
are the
ever
stars
had in
the
our
show.
Lives.
Everything that came to the table was good. Everything. But the burnt ends were particularly good. And let me just tell you, there was a lot of leftovers for me because the portion size was huge. I got the 2 meats. And I think I had the other one was maybe brisket. Or I think I got like the brisket and the burnt ends. And I had a lot of leftover burnt ends. And I brought it home, and let me tell you something. They were so good cold. I love cold
they
meat.
They were good cold.
I love cold meat. That's like a weird thing that
Mac
I have.
Mac and cheese was world class, too.
No, everything there was good, except the fried pickles were the best I've ever had, because most fried pickles are just serviceable bar food. These fried pickles, they were the spears, which is very unusual.
Yeah,
usually people do
the chips.
Chips, right. These were the spears. The outside coating was so crispy, and it stayed together when you bit. You know, like a lot of the time, a fried coating just crumbles right apart away from it.
It was like they were born together.
And
the
you,
fried coating
and
the
you,
pickle.
And you took a bite, and everything just stayed together. And it was the perfect bite of this really juicy chart pickle with this perfectly crisp outside. And it kept together in a way that I've never had a fried pickle keep together. It was amazing.
Our second recommendation for food, number 17 altogether on this Charleston episode, Fleet Landing. Was a real surprise. Now, if you're up by the Pineapple Fountain,
I don't know why it was such a surprise to you. I was confident in this pick,
I'll tell you why it surprised me. Because by us, this type of place can be average. The type of place that's sort of dock front on the water, all about the views. By us at the Jersey Shore, you don't expect world class food at a place like that. You just expect the view and decent food. Here, the food was incredible. So if you're hanging out at the Pineapple Fountain, dipping your toes in the water on
this
a hot
right
day.
This is a block away.
It's a block
from
away.
That
so it's
area,
a good
yeah.
lunch to combine with a walk along that boardwalk where the Pineapple Fountain is.
Yeah. And the stars of the show here was for Wes, his favorite bless Wes, was the she crab soup. Okay, this is my kid. I complain all the time about his eating, but this is a perfect example of how his eating habits are just weird.
It was so creamy.
He just loved that she crab soup. So my picky eater, then that is the star of the show for him. And he like gobbled the whole thing up. I barely got a bite.
The shrimp and grits were
delicious.
Really good.
They were our best of this trip, right? Because that's a classic. So if you go to Charleston, you could order shrimp and grits everywhere if you wanted and compare all of them, right? Well, these shrimp and grits were excellent, and they were some of the best that I've had.
And the stuffed hush puppies, which were stuffed with lobster, shrimp, and corn, were off the hook.
So,
and these didn't come free with your meal, people.
No. They were
an appetizer,
and I said, and the boys were so disappointed because they didn't see regular hush puppies on the menu. So I said to the waitress, can we get the stuffed hush puppies, but can we get plain ones? She's like, no problem. We can get plain ones too. So the plain ones came and the stuffed ones came, and our boys pounded the stuffed ones.
They were full by the time
And then you ordered another order of the stuffed hush puppies. Do you remember that part? You're looking like you forget ordering a second order. And they pounded those too. So when in Charleston, live large and order 2 orders of the stuffed hush puppies. Now,
Okay, so number 18 on our list of 23 things to do in Charleston is Pugin's Smokehouse. And we did this one on our last Charleston trip. This is right downtown, and the snacks and appetizers really stood out for us.
Yeah, so this is a good place. I was thinking Pugin's. I mean, not everything was good on this, and you can get all the classic, like, barbecue and pulled pork and everything here, and it's yummy. But I think that this is one of those places that's really nice if you're going to fit in, like, a happy hour stop. Like, you've been touring all day. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, 4 o'clock. You're not ready for dinner, but you want a snack and a cold drink or something.
I think what you're saying is that out of this list, this was not your favorite.
And that's not true.
But I think what you're saying is like, all right, well, if it was around here, you'd love it. But in Charleston with all of these other places, like, it just wasn't your top.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that I think that their appetizers are particularly fun.
Like the pimento cheese fritters?
So I would, eating here, I would prefer to order 5 of the appetizers than like 1 of the entrees. So they had like the things like the buffalo pork rinds with like crumbled blue cheese. And yes, the pimento cheese fritters and pimento cheese is variety all over the place. And here, it's just the fritters were delicious. So I feel like this is a better small plates place. That doesn't mean that the food is not as good. It means that I actually prefer appetizers to entrees sometimes. And this is the kind of place.
So in a sense, it is your style.
Yeah, it's exactly my style. And then they also have really, really fun cocktails. So they have
high
profile cocktails, and they're very creative, and they're a twist on classics, which is always fun. So I feel like some of that stuff can get lost if you're just going in and ordering an entree. But if you're going in for small plates and drinks, then it shines in a way that it wouldn't otherwise.
And just a reminder, we always recommend trying a lot of these places at lunch because you save a lot of money and it's a friendlier time to take kids. Now, number 19 on our list of 23 things to do in Charleston, and this was my single favorite dining experience from our last Charleston trip, Smoke Barbecue over on King Street. And I will never, ever forget their chicken wings.
Yeah, the chicken wings, because they smoke them and then fry them. And that combination is just... Now, I will say that the Swig and Swine, the chicken wings there were phenomenal this time too.
True.
And the boys loved their chicken wings this time. So they gave them a run for the money in the same vein, that smoked fried chicken wing. So it has the best of the tender meat with
smoke,
the crispy.
Smoke is also beautiful inside.
Yeah.
It's just a gorgeous interior. It's very dark. It's very romantic. It's very downtown Charleston.
Absolutely. But they also do these like barbecue takes on a lot of famous sandwiches. So they have like the pastrami rumen, but with their smoked meat.
That was so good.
And a Cuban sandwich, you know, with their smoked meat. Sloppy smoke instead of a sloppy
Joe.
Why
didn't we go back to smoke this year?
You can't do everything.
You can try.
I know. Well, we did. We ate out a lot. And so I kind of think that this is like the perfect bar and grill in Charleston. That's how I felt about smoke. Like, it's a bar and grill, the
elevated
Charleston style.
It's a Charleston style, which means elevated.
Yeah, well, yeah, and just kind of this really, the Charleston food movement, which has been in just full effect for a few years, loves to take that classic low country cuisine, and they just love to like deconstruct it and reconstruct it in really creative ways. And it's fun. It's just fun to see what people are up to when you go down there. If you're a foodie, I know that, look, we go to foodie destinations all the time. There's something that is so original because they're not throwing out the baby with the bathwater in the foodie movement in Charleston. They all challenge themselves to take all of the classics that have been around for hundreds of years in low country cuisine and do something fresh with it. And it's really remarkable.
You're reminding me that we did a Trailer Life magazine article on Charleston. And if that is available online, we will link to it in the show notes because we talk about a lot of these same places, and you can see some great pictures of some of these places.
Now, our very first meal in Charleston this year was a breakfast, and it's number 20 for our things to do in Charleston, and it is the Acme Low Country Kitchen.
Which was packed, and if you go Sunday morning like we did, make sure you get there before the people from church arrive.
The good people
we
that are going to church.
Beat the church people.
I had amazing...
And this is Isle de Palme. Isle de Palme.
Yes, so it would be great to go here for breakfast and then go to the you know, Isle de Palm County Park for the beach, or vice versa. You could go to the beach, you can, clean up at the changing rooms and everything, and then you could go over there for an early dinner or something. So you can combine that,
and
those
kinds of things. And it's casual
enough
to show up here after a day at the beach, I think.
Oh, yeah, sure. And I had great Eggs Benedict. The boys had pancakes, biscuits. They loved the biscuits there. They had the boys had the big breakfast. That was, it was called the big breakfast.
I had a delicious pecan crusted fried chicken dish. That was really, really good.
You were like, give me all the fried chicken. I'm in Charleston. So really nice. And also nice cocktails. I had a Bloody Mary, that was a low country Bloody Mary. So it had extra spice to it, which is always good for me. And that was yummy.
All right. So now back to the Sullivan's Island area right near Shem's Creek and also, somewhat close to Mount Pleasant or part of Mount Pleasant.
Well, it's all Mount Pleasant.
Right, it's all Mount Pleasant.
Mount Pleasant is big. Yeah.
Page's Okra Grill, which we went to last time. Really great place. It's going to be one of the best places you can eat in Mount Pleasant.
Oh, yeah. Everybody, if you ask the locals, right, if you're good like that and you're like, where should I eat? I promise you that every single local, the first thing they'll say is Page's Okra Grill. Now, I think that it was delicious. It was absolutely one of the tops. We tried Vickery's because we wanted that view right on Shem's Creek this year instead of going there when we were down there in Sullivan's Island. And I definitely think that Page's is better than any of those bar and grill options right on the water.
Page's is a bit more fun, too. It's like a bit more of a fun, upbeat.
It's good.
Party atmosphere.
It is solid.
Party atmosphere, but still kid-friendly enough.
They had the best fried, right? So you think about all the classics. Like, so I pick my best this, my best that. Like, they had the best fried green tomatoes that I've had there. They were delish.
They were
so, and definitely
But the Siwi restaurant also had amazing fried green tomatoes. I don't know which one you'd pick there. So number 22 on our list of 23 things to do in Charleston is the legendary road food joint, the Siwi restaurant, which is out near the Birds of Prey. It's right
and
there.
And the Coastal Expedition's trip to Bull Island.
This place, if you do the Bull's Island, then plan on having lunch or dinner here after. You won't regret it.
Now, these are not only the first hush puppies that my boys ever had. And again, this was back on a Myrtle Beach trip years ago. This was the first time that they had the hush puppies there. And so I remembered the hush puppies because it was the first time the boys had them and they were like,
they
obsessed.
Made an impression.
Now, then we went back this time and I tasted the hush puppies. And I was like, oh my gosh, these are still the best hush puppies that I've ever had. So just like I've identified the best fried pickles, the best chicken, wings, the best fried green tomatoes, the best shrimp and grits. I'm telling you, these are the best
and
hush puppies.
This is a roadside joint. Oh. I mean, it's welcoming and kind and great service.
The owner of the campground, when I asked him where he would send us, he goes, now I'm going to tell you.
He starts winding up like he's going to give
like,
us
it's
this.
A little bit out in the middle of nowhere. And he goes, you go up. And I look at him, I go, Seaway. And he goes, yeah, you know it. I was like, now, we've been there.
The waitress basically insisted that I try the special that day, which was a fried green tomato bacon scallop po' boy. And it was astonishingly big.
You couldn't even get it.
Stephanie looked at it. She's like, you're not finishing that.
Yeah.
And I finished it.
It was all of Low Country on a roll. And then I had the flounder because I wanted to do like the fish fry kind of a thing that they did. But I got it Siwi style, which was the Old Bay garlic, lemon, and cherry sauce. And it's just yummy. And I got the green beans, of course, because, when you're from the north, you have to go south to get like the green beans and that fat back kind of a thing that you guys do down there that we don't do up here, and it's so yummy. So I had to do like my green beans and mac and cheese sides with it and everything, and good times. Yeah.
Last but never least, the Early Bird Diner, which has the best chicken and waffles in Charleston. And I would hazard
to guess. Who else has better chicken and waffles?
Hazard to guess it's the best chicken and waffles in the world.
Do you remember the chicken waffles we had in New Mexico?
That was good. But this was, Early Bird was better.
Different. Yeah. Early Bird is
better.
That
Albuquerque, whatever that place was, that place was awesome. This place is better. I think Max got the country scramble and loved it.
Yeah.
And you got the corn cake Benedict.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did.
The grits were yummy.
Because there's a Benedict on the menu.
Wessie got chicken and waffles. We all loved the chicken and waffles.
The chicken is so flavorful and tender, and the outside is so crispy. It's just perfect. There's nothing. I mean, and then it's good cold too, which is always a big thing for me. The leftovers have to be really good too. That's part of my dining experience.
This place, you're probably gonna have to wait in line. It's worth it.
Yeah, we only waited like 20 minutes.
And this is near James Island County Park. Right. Way more. It was like a solid 30 to 40 minutes away from the Mount Pleasant.
Because it's on the other side.
It's on the other side.
For those of you trying to piece these things together, we've tried to kind of group things a little bit. But, you know, Mount Pleasant area is like the northeast, and then Charleston City proper is in the middle, and then James Island is southwest, right? It all kind of like runs the coast like that. So the downtown Charleston is in the middle, so you can choose to stay on the sort of southwest side at James Island County Park, or you could choose to stay on the northeast side at the Mount Pleasant Charleston KOA, and the experiences and what you choose to do are going to be very different because they're both chock full of things that you can do right in that
and
area.
The character's very different in both places too. Like Mount Pleasant is newer and more gentrified and more built up with shopping. And then the James Island area is like a little bit more urban. It's older.
Mount Pleasant has tons more dining experiences too. You know, I mean, I really did.
There's also like a Walmart every mile as well.
Yes.
So it's got more chains and things like that. But both areas have a lot to offer and you're going to want, I mean, I think you should just do what we did and at different points stay in both places.
I'm so glad that even though I was almost like, am I going to regret not being at James Island County Park? I was so glad that we were in a different location and could really easily explore all that stuff in Mount Pleasant.
Because we loved the Mount Pleasant Charleston KOA, which we're reviewing on Campground of the Week. And because I think we really enjoyed Mount Pleasant.
I did. I just like being in that location. At first I thought, are we farther away? It was hard for me to gauge it. We weren't.
We were right there.
It was so easy to access downtown. In fact, the first day we went to the USS Yorktown and I was like, we're minutes from downtown. Let's just go down and eat in Swig and Swine. And we did. And it was minutes to get over the bridge into downtown.
As long as you avoided that rush hour traffic on Route 17.
As always.
Now, those are our absolute favorite food experiences in Charleston. And when you're eating out...
Oh, God, I knew you were going to do this.
When you're eating out as much as we did in Charleston with three young boys and you're eating that low country cuisine, you got to make sure your black tanks are functioning properly. And for that, you need to turn to our friends at Thetford.
Look, we stock up on the AquaSoft toilet tissue, and then we also have our favorite AquaChem drop-ins.
We ran out of the AquaSoft on
this
trip.
But we went and bought more. How did we? I thought that whole cupboard was full. What the heck happened?
We were just blasting through toilet paper.
Lucky the camping cat got to a couple rolls in kitty beast mode. So that put us through two rolls. Okay, but listen, the tank blaster. Some people are really out there right now. It's spring. You might have a used RV that is new to you. You might be opening your RV and have tank issues. So Thetford has a tank blaster that you actually use it and it sits overnight in your tanks and then you flush it all out. And it is getting rave reviews, not just from us, but on our Facebook group as well.
Everybody that uses it says it works.
Yes, it really cleans out that tank. So if you have any black tank drama right now at all, I just highly recommend going and getting the tank blaster and then using according to the directions because it has to sit. That's the whole point. It's not just something that you do and flush out right away. So you can also go to Thetford.com to see all the other great tank products they have to keep that smell away.
Now, you're going to want to stay tuned because we have one of the biggest announcements we've ever made in RVFTA podcast history. We've got some changes coming to our podcast, to our formatting. We're really excited. And everyone we've told about this is like, yup, that's going to be better. So stay tuned to find out how the RV Family Travel Atlas and Campground of the Week podcasts are going to be changing quite dramatically starting this June. Stay tuned. Well, welcome back to the show, everybody. We really do hope that you enjoyed our 23 recommendations for things to do in Charleston. And we also really hope that you get to your local Bass Pro Shops or Cabela's this spring to stock up the RV and get everything you need for your next camping trip.
Even though I refused to cook extensively on this trip, we still had our outdoor kitchen from Cabela's set up at our campsite, and we had our ice maker, our automatic ice maker, which has been in business for years now from Cabela's, cranking. So we keep the seltzers outside and we keep the ice maker going and some cups there. And the whole time we're having ice cold
seltzers. It's like headquarters for our camping trip.
Yep. And then we also like to use that ice to fill up our Polar Cap ice cooler. So we usually keep a cooler outside to keep the seltzers on. So we kind of have like this nice little, like almost like bar area, you know, outside the camper. You, did make burgers for the boys one night. The grill was set up there on the camp kitchen. So we have so many of our of these like just standard Cabela's products that we've bought for really affordable prices, and they've now lasted us. We're going into our third and fourth season with some of these products.
And the camp kitchen we've used and abused. The ice maker we've used and abused, and everything.
And
just
the coolers we love.
Takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
Yeah, and that's what I like. That to me is value, right? When you can buy products that you can use for years and you can buy them at something at a price that doesn't feel like you're breaking the bank. That's my sweet spot. So visit BassPro.com or Cabela's.com to find ways that you can make your campsite perfect for you and get it all set up. It's in your nature.
What's also in our nature is constantly evolving and constantly changing. And I just think we're both so committed to our podcast and to our content and to our website. And I personally feel like when it comes to podcasting, we're just getting started and the best years are ahead of us for RV Family Travel Atlas. But we have a huge change and you're going to be shocked for a second, but then let us explain. So there will no longer be a Campground of the Week podcast.
This week there is.
This week.
Go listen to the
Mount Pleasant Charleston KOA will be our last Campground of the Week podcast. But we will still be reviewing campgrounds every week on the RV Family Travel Atlas podcast. So basically what we're doing is we're taking the two shows, our hour-long RV Family Travel Atlas podcast that you all love and adore, I hope, and our half an hour Campground of the Week podcast. And what we're going to do instead is make RV Family Travel Atlas a 4-day a week podcast. But each show will be about 20 minutes. So we will now have brand new content for you, brand new podcast content for you on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday of every week, but they will be shorter episodes. It'll all add up to the same amount of content.
Yeah, don't worry, you'll still get all of your listening time that you had before. It'll just be in a different format. And what this is going to allow us to do is cover a lot more topics and also have a lot more voices on the show. So right now, when we're planning out a season, we have 12 episodes and basically we always have a list of about 30 topics and we end up slicing and dicing and cutting things. And we're always so sad to see the topics that we wanted to cover, but didn't have time. And this way, what we're going to do is just kind of change it up a little bit, do shorter content, but we'll be able to have everybody that we ever want. So if we're at RVX and there's just this vendor there that has a really fun product that everybody might be interested in or something that's up and coming in the RV industry, we don't have to feel like we would have to dedicate the entire hour show to that topic in order to cover it. We know that we can have a 20-minute show on it and it'll be great. And then there's also room for other topics within that same week.
And all of the correspondents that you love and adore that have often in recent years really ended up on Campground of the Week, more so than an RV Family Travel Atlas, will be back on the main RV Family Travel Atlas feed. So you can get all of the Carrie Cox, Casita Dean May, Kate Dunbar, all of those great segments from them will be back on the RV Family Travel Atlas feed in a major, major way.
Yeah.
So we are really, really excited for this new format.
You don't have to do anything.
You don't have to do anything.
It's going to be your same feed as you're listening to this show right now. Please do subscribe. subscribe to the show on whatever podcast app you listen to, whether it's Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify or Google Podcasts, wherever you listen, please just hit the subscribe button. And then all of these shows will go right to your app, no matter, you know, what you won't have to go and hunt out and say, wait, where are they? They're not publishing in Campground of the Week. And another thing is don't worry, all of the Campground of the Weeks will still remain there. I will keep that feed open forever. I will pay the hosting fee. I'm not going to shut it down. It'll be there. You can always go back and listen to one of the reviews, because I know one of the things our listeners do is they listen to a review, they say, I want to go there. And then they're going there the next year. And that next year they re-listen before they visit. That's a really common thing that people tell us they do. So don't worry, you're still going to be able to do that.
And you're still going to get campground reviews all the time. They'll just be on the RV Family Travel Atlas show, which is how it all started.
Yeah. So everybody, we're really happy to, you know, just do something new and different, and hopefully something that serves you guys all a little bit more. We want to keep things
better for your drive times,
yes,
better for your workout times, better for when you're doing laundry or dishes. That
we're busy
shorter
parents.
Format's going to work.
We commute
nicely
to work. We clean the house. We fold laundry. We do all the things that you guys do when you listen to our podcast. And we always think about how we listen, how other people tell us we listen, and we want to really fit that RV fun content within your busy schedule, right? That's our goal. So this is a way for us to do it, and we're very excited, and we hope that you'll tune in, and also we hope that we'll see you at the campground.
We'll see you at the campground.